On this episode of the Resetter Podcast, I bring you Jill Miller. So, I hope you all know that part of my passion is giving you lifestyle tools, especially highlighting what we need to do as women after 40. How do we adapt to all the neurochemical changes that are going on in our body? This conversation with Jill Miller is literally going to blow your mind. It blew my mind because I never realized that as estrogen went down, we see dramatic changes in our fascial system. Now, you're going to hear in this conversation, Jill is going to talk about exactly what fascia is. It is one of the most abundant tissues in our body. It connects every muscle, every ligament, to every organ. We are completely wrapped in this fascia. And check this out. Our queen, or I like to call her our diva hormone, estradiol, stimulates flexibility of fascia. And when estradiol goes away, there is a massive shift to the fascial system. It could be as simple as it makes us feel more stiff, or as complicated as it contributes to bloating. This is really interesting. We had a whole conversation at the back end about bloating and what we can do through touch and not only self-massage. We talked a lot about using tune-up balls and different types of balls to reactivate the fascia so that not only are you less injury prone, not only are you less stiff, but it'll take the bloating down that so many of us experience. This conversation blew me away, and I think you all are going to absolutely find so many things in here that are going to help improve not only your health today, but set you up for loving the body that you live in as you age. Now, a couple things about Jill is she is a fascia expert. She has 30 years of corrective movement expertise. She is big in the yoga movement. She has created what she calls self-care fitness programs. Have you heard of the yoga tune-up balls, or The Role Model is one of her books? These were created by Jill. This woman is a powerhouse. She has not only brought us two huge resources, The Role Model and Body by Breath. We will link both of those in there. But she also has a very specific idea about how to use different types of balls to be able to release fascia. You'll see, I talked to her about the foam rollers. Not a fan. They hurt so much. She'll explain why that is not as beneficial as using some of these softer balls. Either way you look at this, this conversation, I'm not sure, has ever been had around hormone changes and fascia, and I am so excited to bring it to you. So, Jill Miller, what do you need to know about fascia as you go through the menopausal years? I hope you enjoy it as much as I did. And again, as always, if you love this, send this out into the world, because so many women are struggling with the symptoms of perimenopause and menopause, and this conversation needs to be heard by those women. So as always, enjoy. Welcome to the Resetter Podcast. This podcast is all about empowering you to believe in yourself again. If you have a passion for learning, if you're looking to be in control of your health and take your power back, this is the podcast for you. So let me just start by welcoming you. I'm so excited to have this conversation with you.
Oh, likewise. I've been a fan for a long time, and this is really an excellent opportunity for me to talk with you about things I'm interested in too.
I love this idea that there is a hormonal connection to fascia. I've looked at hormones from every angle I possibly can. I've never looked at it from a fascia angle. So could we start just with, so that we fill everybody in, what is fascia and why is it so damn important? Because I feel like it's this one part of the body that does not get enough credit for its impact on our physical and mental health. So let's start with unpacking fascia.
Yes, we will be here all day unpacking fascia because fascia is essentially what packs you together. Fascia yes. is your seam system. Fascia is a fibrous and fluid network that strings every cell of your body together. It suspends yeah. every muscle cell and binds them together. It's what helps your organs to be in float within your body. There are so many different components that comprise fascia, but I like to simply say it's your seam system. Mm. It's the stitches that hold everything together, but it also gives you your form and shape. And it impacts every single system of the body. It runs through every system of the body. It contains every system of the body. And so there are many different aspects that we can dive into. I think some of the more famous aspects of fascia are its mechanical aspect. So folks like Tom Myers or the Rolf Institute, you know, anatomy trains have brought into focus how this fascia, essentially this stitching fabric, links muscles together from end to end. And so it's really been able to translate well into performance and to functional movement. But, you know, fascia is also a hormonal tissue, which I'll just tease that. It's yeah. also a bed for nerve tissue. It yeah. houses more sensory nerve endings than your skin or your eyes.
Yeah.
So we can look at fascia. Once you look at fascia, you have to look at every area of the body and get really interested in this connecting tissue that kind of houses all the things. So where do you want to start?
Yeah, you know what it reminds me of is 10 years ago, I became obsessed with detoxing. And I was like, oh my gosh, I can see how toxins accumulate in the body as you get older. I read some really interesting research on how when your hormones go through a massive change like they do during perimenopause, mm-hmm. that certain heavy metals like lead start to leach out into your circulatory system. They go up into your brain, affect your brain. So I was like, if we were having this conversation 10 years ago, I would have been like all about detox. And then I realized something really important, which was that the lymph system has to be flowing well in order for the detox organs to do their job. I feel like the same thing about fascia. We get so clued in and on like, oh, I gotta eat certain foods to improve my liver, or I need to repair my gut. But organs don't work in isolation. They work with these connective tissues, lymph being one, nervous system being one, circulatory system being one, and fascia being the other one. And I don't understand why we don't talk about it enough because, yes, I hear what you're saying. It holds everything together. But there's also a communication that happens. And when scars happen and injuries happen and the fascia tightens, it affects everything in the body. So can you talk about how fascia is this communication system in our body?
Yeah. So I think we can start really granularly. So I already yeah. talked about the big span of the tissue, right? From cell to skin and everything in between. But your fascia is comprised of a number of different cells. A number of them reside in fascia and a number of different cells traffic through your fascia. But the resident cells, the primary resident cells are called fibroblasts. And these fibroblasts are like little miniature spiders that tend and mend the fibers of your net, of this fascial net. What are the fibers? The fibers are collagen, many different types of collagen, reticulin, elastin. So there are many different elastic or tensional fibers that comprise this fascia. And so, for example, when we have a wound or an injury or a surgery, in order for blood vessels and nerves to get back to the site of injury, the fasciocytes migrate to the area and they start spitting out collagen and elastin in order to build bridges from one side of the wound to the other side of the wound. And so they end up creating the scaffolding that allows then blood vessels to get in there, for all the macrophages to come in and do the cleanup, and then eventually for nerve endings to be able to supply the whatever it is needed there, whether it's musculoskeletal activity or circulation improvements via the nervous system network. So we have these fibroblasts, And by the way, the fibroblasts are going to be very interesting to you because they're the ones that are sensitive to estrogen. They have estrogen receptors all over them.
Mm.
And we also had this other cell called fasciocytes. Fasciocytes were located, or they were discovered just around 10 years ago by a researcher in Italy named Dr. Carla Stecco, an amazing researcher. Your people should look into her. And these fasciocytes are the cells that spit out the correct chemistry for the fluid environment of fascia. So just like your joints have synovial fluid, right? Synovial fluid is a really popular and known substance that even most people have heard about synovial fluid, that grease for the joints. Well, your fascia has grease too, and that grease is hyaluronan. And so the fasciocytes spit out the right quantities of hyaluronan to allow your tissues to move around each other. Because if your tissues don't glide within themselves, they get sticky, they get stiff, they get stuck, they limit movement, they hurt. And this is what propagates movement dysfunction. This is what propagates stiffness. This helps to contribute to cell death, to sarcopenia, and so many other things. So these fasciocytes are really important. There are also... Do you want to ask something before?
No, go. You go. I have a question about estrogen, but go. Yeah, I want to.
Sure. I know everybody's got a question about estrogen.
I know. I have a lot of questions on that.
But you really asked about a communication, right? You asked about, this communication. So the communication, I think we can probably think about the nervous system's load in the fascial tissue. Mm-hmm. So there are 250 million sensory neurons that end in your fascial tissues. So this is a gigantic feedback loop, and this is happening, within muscles in the muscle spindles, where these are the stretch receptors, but they're also happening in Golgi tendon organs, but they're also happening at the tendon. They're also happening in many different layers. We have these Ruffini endings, for example, that are sensory neurons that are living inside your fatty layer. They're living inside a layer of fascia within the fatty tissue of your body called the superficial fascia membrane. And so we have a high propensity of sensory neurons all over our body within our joint capsules. These are the Pacinian corpuscles. So it gets really interesting when we start to dive into these smaller and smaller bits of the greater whole.
It's like its own ecosystem, is what I
just
said. It
is your ecosystem. I would say you're just living in the fascist world.
Ah, oh my gosh. Okay. So let's go back to estrogen, because this is one thing that I've been deeply thinking about, is when estradiol goes away, all the things that estradiol supported, great brain health, cardiovascular health, it's more than just releasing an egg every month, that there are these requirements of different tissues in our body for estradiol. So once estradiol's gone, because she's supposed to go away throughout menopause, what we're left with, these parts of our body that don't function as well because it doesn't have the chemistry to be able to perform the way it's supposed to. So what happens with fascia when you go through menopause? If there's an estrogen receptor site in there and now I'm not giving it estrogen, what happens to fascia?
Yeah. So let me describe what happens on a monthly basis prior to menopause, prior to perimenopause. And then I think it'll get really clear what happens due to menopause and this withdrawal of estrogen from your body. So this research was done by Carla Stecco, who I mentioned before, and Caterina Fede, this whole group in Padua. And they presented this research at the Fascia Research Congress. I'm a real fascia nerd, so I go to these congresses. And in 2021, when she started talking about female fascia and the relationship to estrogen, progesterone, the room was just, I don't think anybody breathed for, the 20 minutes of her presentation, because we couldn't believe that somebody was presenting research that validated the bizarre, experience of living in a female body and how many changes occur all the time. But here's its impact on fascia. So we have these estrogen receptors on the fibroblast, and when we have our estrogen peaks, there's two estrogen peaks in the cycle, right? You have peak one, between 10 and 14 days, and you have second peak between 20, 24 days. When we have these estrogen peaks, the fibroblasts start to create more type 3 collagen. Now, I'm sorry, there are dozens of types of collagen, and this is not even something I could give you a lecture on. But the type 3 collagen is the looser, more elastic collagen. Okay. And it starts to get rid of or eat away type 1 collagen. Type 1 is the firmer, stronger, tighter, more rigid collagen. So as you start to peak at days 10 to 14 during ovulation, your fascial body becomes looser. It becomes more open. It becomes more flexible. You are less rigid. And so in that looseness, that might sound really good if you're like a stiff person, but it makes you accident and injury prone. Especially, you know, if you're like a female soccer player and, you know, this is when we're at higher risk of having these connective tissue or, you know, ligament strains. And then the second peak at that 20 to 24 day mark, again, there's an increase in estrogen in the system. We become, again, hyper flexible in our connective tissues. And this is like not an overnight thing. This is like a progressive thing. And then it wanes again and you become those looser connective tissues are then cannibalized by the fibroblasts and they replace them with type 1. So we have this constant shifting of loose, stiff. And it's helpful to know, especially if you're extra estrogen sensitive, especially if you're somebody who suffers great pains, you know, right before period at that second surge. I think it's really helpful to know, well, maybe I shouldn't be lifting super heavy on those days. You know, I can lift, I can walk, but I maybe not want to try my PR during those days just because of that extra extensibility of the tissues.
So one thing that I've looked at when we look at working out for the cycle is I think there's a lot of conversation right now about how important building muscle is for women in general, but especially for women as they go through menopause or perimenopause. So let's use perimenopause as an example. If I'm in ovulation, yes, I'm more flexible according to the theory that you just gave, but maybe then I could do higher weights in a slower motion. I'm thinking more like HIIT training where you're jumping that or you're doing very quick reps. That actually is going to be more challenging during these peaks of estrogen. So would you say, given what you become more flexible, that a workout just needs to be slower and not jeopardizing your ability to have a quick turn of the ankle or a quick pull of the tendon because you are more flexible during that time?
Yeah, I mean, I would say that during those times, doing long-held static stretches, like within a yoga class, that is where you might actually be at more risk because you're so extra stretchy that you could end up deforming those connective tissue junctions because you're so extra stretchy. So it's like, I like what you're saying about the weight training. And, you know, I do weight training myself. I'm not a personal trainer. I come from the yoga space. But I personally am extremely mobile. I'm on the hypermobile spectrum. So I tend to concentrate on exactly what you're describing. But I don't necessarily blanket statement that for all bodies, because I think the number one thing that you said there was slow. And to me, that means I'm going to be really investing my awareness in these movements. So nothing, when we are at our most flexy or at our most fascially fragile, I don't think phoning it in is a good idea. I think we have to be extremely mindful. One of the things that I talk about in my new book, Body by Breath, is my body thinks in feels, that you really want to dial into both your proprioception, the feedback you're getting from your body, as well as the interoception, the feeling of your physiology, the perception of your physiology, and pay attention, very, very good attention to all aspects of your movement so that you don't increase your risk of injury or harm. So, you know, I just think it's really, because I talk to trainers about like the science is the science. So your interpretation of that and how you implement it is really, you know, I think there's so many different possibilities, but I think the best thing that we can do is increase our awareness, like to know that that is, you know, probable that our fascial tissues are more elastic during those times. So make of it what you will, depending on your primary body type in the first place.
Yeah.
So go ahead.
Yeah. So if you were going to customize, and I know, again, I think it's, you're not a personal trainer, but you have this great yoga background. If you were to customize a change of workout when estrogen peaks, what would you tell us to do?
I would tell you to engage in slower, more mindful movements. I wouldn't necessarily decrease the load, but I would not go for max reps and I would not go for PRs.
Okay. So, and because the other problem that I think a lot of women have, especially athletic women, is we've learned to override pain in our body when we're working out. So I'm envisioning when I was a menstruating woman, I was envisioning like, would I have the intuitive sense to know this isn't good for my joints? Because when you're lifting weights, it hurts. It's not fun. At least, you know, and if you're pushing it, it's hard. So how do you know what's good pushing and what's dangerous pushing during those times?
Yeah. And unfortunately, you don't always know until tomorrow or the day after tomorrow.
Yeah, right.
Because of delayed onset, which, by the way, is not happening in the muscle. Delayed onset muscle soreness is actually delayed onset fascial soreness. This is the sensory neurons within the fascial tissues, because the muscles repair very quickly. They have a 24-hour cycle, but fascia has a 48 to 72-hour repair cycle. So some of that inflammation, the inflammation that we're experiencing, this engorgement is that the time that for the fascial repair is taking longer than the muscle. And so you may not know if you've overdone it. I mean, frequently we don't know that we've overdone it until the next day anyway. But,
right,
you know, by the third day, you're still unable to go down the stairs. You probably overdid it. And then what day of your cycle was that?
So that's really interesting, because one of the things I noticed as I went through perimenopause,
yes,
was extreme soreness. And I didn't know, again, I've been an athlete my whole life. I was a competitive tennis player in my college years. Like, I was shocked that the workouts I had been doing on a semi-regular basis, all of a sudden now were giving me 3 to 4 day sorenesses.
Yeah.
So that, I never could figure that out. I was like, is it testosterone decrease? What's causing this soreness? What I'm hearing you say is it was probably too much strain on the fascia, which would make sense during the perimenopausal years, because estrogen goes really high and then she goes really low on, you know, all the time, like a roller coaster ride. So we can use the how long soreness is hanging out to help us understand if we are now injuring fascia, not building muscle.
Absolutely. I think that is your code, and you know, it's your body's way of speaking to you. And so one of the ways we address it in the work that I do is through self-myofascial release. So we will use gentle friction using soft pliable tools to induce the fasciocytes, I'd mentioned these cells, to spurt out hyaluronan, to increase glide, where glide is now glommy or agglomerated due to the repair process, or just frankly from tearing and scarring and getting matted down. So, and then this not even addressing the autonomic nervous system benefits of doing that. But also, here's another thought for you, which is that perimenopause is so challenging. I'm in perimenopause right now,
yeah,
and it's like, oh, 2 months, no period. And then, oh my gosh, I'm hemorrhaging,
yes,
for a week. This is
right,
really,
yes,
fascinating. It's so unpredictable. But when I was talking about the sensitivity of fibroblasts to estrogen, what happens when the estrogen starts to recede is your fibroblasts aren't being sensitized. They're not being told estrogen is around. And so they're not creating the more elastic collagen. They start overproducing type 1 collagen and stiffening down. So mm-hmm. they start making your whole body stiffer. And this is one of the chief complaints of women who have gone through perimenopause and are now in menopause, is that their joints feel stiff. They feel achy. They don't have as much mobility anymore. And that is that one of the reasons is because that type 1 collagen is now the dominant fiber that is helping hold them together. You know,
because you're not getting estradiol. So your estrogen's gone down. So, and so now stiffness has kicked in. So what do we do for that woman, and how do we help that woman?
Well, first, you know, definitely consider, I'm not a prescriber, but I definitely am staying in touch with my medical team, because I really believe in my hormone patch has been extremely helpful for me, especially with my cognitive function. But my plan is to maintain some level of estrogen as well as a lot of movement. I work with plenty of people much more advanced age than I am who use this work, the work that I teach, the self-myofascial release strategies, the stress reduction strategies via the body, via the breath, to stay mobile, to produce hyaluronan when that is starting to decline as well. So we want to make sure that we massage the tissues, we address the joints, we create friction, very specific friction in different zones so that your muscles can continue to contract as much as they can and lengthen as much as they can because they live inside your fascia. If your fascia is stiff, if it's agglomerated, if it's congested, if it's bound up, your muscles aren't going to get any stronger. They're just going to get the squeeze by your stiffening connective tissue. So it's important that we stay mobile.
And I also want to point out that even if we do the patch or we do bioidenticals, you're still not getting the same amount of estrogen you got at 25. So, you know, I love right now that we're at least revisiting some of the bioidenticals and some of the HRT. Like, I think it's a personal path, but I also feel like we're losing in that conversation the fact that you're still not getting back what you had at 25 because that's not appropriate for your age. You're not trying to release eggs as much. So with that in mind, what I just heard is outside of movement and muscle building, I got to think about my fascial system, especially as a postmenopausal woman. And I fear that what you're going to say is that is foam rolling, which is the most horrific way ever to approach my body. So tell me how, as a 54-year-old postmenopausal woman who works out a ton, what do I do for my fascia?
So I've written two books on self-myofascial release, and I've written a chapter in a medical textbook called Fascia Function and Medical Applications on self-myofascial release. So unfortunately, you are going to hear about rolling.
No, I know.
Maybe not foam rolling because I'm not a foam roller person. I like a smaller profile tool. I like a gushy, pliable tool that mimics human hands rather than feels like you're being, you know, flogged
tortured
by a bat. Yes. Or by a PVC pipe because texture matters and hardness matters. And this is I think a really interesting thing to look at. Many people have a recoil when they hear foam rolling because it freaking hurts.
It hurts.
Why does
much.
It hurt? It hurts because when something is too hard for your nervous system, for your stretch tolerance, for your pressure tolerance, your sympathetic nervous system says, no, go there. Protect. Defend. And that's called your muscle bracing response. So when you get on a foam roller and you put it on a body part that is extremely tight and rigid, the roller touches it. Your nervous system says, this woman is trying to harm me. So I am going to stiffen in order to not let this implement go into my body. And so you're just rolling against your own tension. You're at war, literally at war with your tissues and your nervous system. This is not a therapeutic response. So what we want to try to do is emulate as carefully as we can tender touch that disarms this stress response because it's really hard to relax, let go, receive therapy when you're at odds with the therapy.
Right.
So I'll just show you. I have a fleet of balls called the role model balls. This is a small one. This is a yoga tune-up ball, but they're gushy and they're grippy.
Yeah.
And what that means is when they roll against soft tissues like muscle bellies, or they roll up and against bony junctions like your spine or your shoulder or even your face or your foot, there's a yielding so that the bony prominences don't just pinch and annoy and get bruised by like a lacrosse ball or a foam roller, but there's a compliance of your soft tissue and the tool. And so you can adjust your autonomic nervous system, your stress response. You can enter into a relaxation response. And then it really feels like you're getting massaged by a pro, but it's you doing it yourself, which is very empowering. And so returning to our talk about the fascia sites and the fibroblasts, because estradiol is waning, is removed. We don't have this sea that we're swimming in anymore. Instead of relying on chemicals to touch the cells, we now rely on pressure to touch the cells. This is called mechanotransduction. So the pressure from the rolling can stimulate the fibroblasts to do the right thing, to maintain elasticity in our tissue. Because if you're giving a signal to these cells that they need to maintain elasticity, they will. But if you if you'll maintain stiffness by staying stiff. You'll maintain elasticity by introducing movement, by introducing elasticity to the tissues via compression, via shear. There's many different applications that I go over in my work.
So you know what it reminds me of? One of the research articles that really shocked me that I found at the beginning of 2023 was a real in-depth look at how estrogen and progesterone stimulate a lot of neurotransmitters. So if we just stay on the estrogen path,
okay.
Estrogen stimulates, estradiol specifically, stimulates dopamine, serotonin, acetylcholine, oxytocin, BDNF. I mean, so when she goes away, you're losing all these other neurotransmitters. And so there needs to be a lifestyle that fills in to be able to support each one of those neurotransmitters. So like serotonin. Really interesting thing about serotonin is actually eating carbs. If you eat poultry, specifically something that's high in tryptophan, and then you follow that up a couple of hours later with carbohydrates, you actually use the carbohydrate to convert tryptophan into serotonin, is another study that I found. Okay, so how many women as they go through menopause understand, oh, I may not be happy right now because I've lost estrogen that has decreased serotonin. So I need to look at what I can do and hack in strategies like I just gave you to bring up serotonin. What I just learned is that if we are getting that same response in the fascia, then we need to backfill in with something like the yoga tune-up balls to be able to stimulate the fascia in a manner in which estradiol was doing, but she's now gone.
Right. And so we're using pressure to do that, right? Pressure,
yes,
shear,
I love that.
Deep touch, and novel touch, because your brain really, you're a sensory thing. My body thinks and feels. So this really helps excite your brain about these new sensations from within your body. And I mean, we use the balls all over. I have a special one, this one called the Gorgeous Ball. This is all over the trunk. And so you can pressurize your rib cage, your lungs, your heart, your all these deep core muscles, your organs, your viscera, manipulating this very helpful for digestion. I know that's something that's really important to your listeners.
Yeah.
Also mobilizing the colon and so on. But I have a menu of five. It's called the 5 P's of the parasympathetic nervous system that I think is very easy for people to create for themselves to induce this relaxation response. And rolling is included. But I think that to back up, like what you're saying, to back up in a mechanical way, I call this the 5 P's of the parasympathetic nervous system.
Ooh,
and so the first P is perspective. So perspective means you introduce a mindset that makes you aware that you are trying to become aware of the experience of your body. And so one of the P's that I work with all the time, because I actually live with a lot of high anxiety, a long childhood history that's brought me to this point in life. But I like to say to myself, all of me is welcome here. All of me is welcome here, so that I allow for the experience of my body to speak whatever it might need to as I'm going through this process. And so perspective, another simple perspective could just be, I'm a student of my body, or I embody my body.
I love that.
Just to welcome the feelings to come up, and whatever the feelings are. Sometimes they're emotions. Sometimes they're feelings of eroticism. Sometimes they're feelings of owie. Sometimes they're feeling of pain. Sometimes they're memories. So that's the first P. The second P is place. In order for your body to enter into the relaxation response, the therapeutic response, the environment that you're in is very critical. And ideally, you're in a place that's safe to you, a place that's quiet, and even maybe a little dark or, relaxing. So it's a relaxing environment where you feel safe. So we have our perspective, we have our place. The third P is position. And position takes into account how blood pressure is calculated by your body. And so the easiest position is recline. Get down on the
ground.
Yeah. Now, if you lay down or you lounge back, you're typically going to have a more relaxed experience physiologically because your diaphragm is offloaded from its postural component. Your heart rate will slow down. Your breath rate will slow down. And then from where I come from, if you're really want to induce the relaxation response, you might even raise your pelvis higher than your heart, higher than your head, like by putting your pelvis up on a yoga block or a stack of books or, you know, put it on the gorgeous ball. And that way you're in this gentle slope. And that takes advantage of something called the baroreceptor reflex. But anyway, that ignites the vagus nerve, your major parasympathetic nerve, to really slow down the heart rate, to really slow down the breath rate. Okay, so those are some organizing principles. We've got perspective, place, position. The fourth P is pace of breath. Breathing is free. Breathing comes with no bells and whistles. I mean, except whistling. You can always manipulate the pace of your breath to adjust state. Now, it's easy for me to say. It's not always easy to do, especially if you are in the throes of a panic attack. But typically, we can induce a relaxation response by extending our exhalations, just making them a little longer than the inhale that we breathed prior. So if you can consider that, trying to blow out, get the wind out, get the candles on the cake out, making that happen longer than inhale. And there's so many, I mean, I wrote a 480-page book about different breathing
ways you can do that.
That also, especially for people who have what I call breath induced anxiety. So some people, when they're told to breathe, that actually spikes their threat response. And so sometimes we have to take breath off the table and go right to the fifth P, which is palpation. And palpation is what we've been talking about. It's inducing pressure into your body in novel ways that delights the brain or confuses the brain and allows these pressures to help also cascade you into relaxation response. And in my most recent work, there are these portals that pressurize mechanical places where your vagus nerve is available, and that can hasten even more relaxation. So these five P's of the parasympathetic nervous system, when you compound them, it is like your inner medicine chest. So it's not like taking Klonopin or whatever. You're actually creating an internal environment for your physiology where you are crafting this calming response and you're getting body work done in the meantime. So the five P's again, it's perspective, place, position, pace of breath, palpation.
So if I'm a 47-year-old woman, I'm having a panic attack. I'm starting to learn how to live with anxiety for the first time because of the loss of hormones. I could use those five P's as a way to guide myself into a calmer state. Could you talk a little bit about, like, so would I lay on the ground with my hips up? Get one of the balls. Like, give us some action of how that might look in a momentary panic attack.
Yeah, in a momentary panic attack, because I have them sometimes when I travel. What I actually like to do is because it's usually like in public, like on an airplane, I'll put the ball actually in my gut. Can't see it, right? So I'll press into my gut or my ribs, and I'll bend over. And this gives biofeedback. So you have something, a tool that you can actually breathe against. And that really helps because it mimics the bear hug, right? So, you know, when your toddlers are having a temper tantrum and their faces are turning beet red, that if you can get them to a place where you can give them a good solid pressure hug, that can help them to finally switch gears and then start to ramp back up into a more homeostatic place of communication and interaction. So I give myself that bear hug using the tool. And I mean, I carry this around with me. It just deflates. It's in my backpack. And I'm really specifically thinking about a missed connection that happened recently where I was like, okay, I can't even move my legs. I was in such a panic attack. But as soon as I was able to get to the gate, I started using my tools right away.
Yeah.
Palpation, head below heart, extended exhalations. And then the perspective, telling myself that I'm okay. It's a safe place. My breath is safe. My breath is home. Just whatever I could.
I think what's really important about that story and what I'm trying to educate women on is that it would be easy. This is, again, sort of the world we live in, where you would see somebody do like, oh, you're having a panic attack, grab the ball, put it around your stomach, exhale out more than you inhale. And we tend to think of that as woo-woo. Like, oh, that's kind of a weird, I think culturally, right. I know you don't, I don't, but what I want the listeners to hear is that it may seem, let's say, insignificant. That may seem mm-hmm. like an insignificant approach to anxiety. But if you back it up to what we talked about before, which is you're in your mid-40s, you're losing estrogen, fascia is tightening, it's going to be easier, you don't have progesterone helping you make GABA, these panic attacks, this anxiety is going to appear because you are neurochemically changing. So what you just described is science showing us how to adapt to that change. That's my point in making that, so that we don't, I think what you said was brilliant, and I want to make sure that the listeners don't disregard that, mm-hmm. because that was a phenomenal, easy way that we can all lean into. Where my brain goes next is, what about bloating? Can that help with bloating?
Oh, so I will share this with you. So I am a recovered anorexic, and I'm also a recovered bulimic. Mm. And I try to stay away. I totally stay away from any, you know, nutritional advice to people. So I always go to the mechanical side of things. I listen to nutritional advice, but I never engage in that conversation because I'm just not an expert on it. And I'm not good with managing other people's nutritional or their body shape expectations.
Right.
But bloating is extremely uncomfortable. And yep. it's really problematic for a lot of the tissues that I love to talk about, namely the respiratory diaphragm. So when there is excess gas in your viscera, your diaphragm, which lives inside of your rib cage, has a really hard time descending. Mm. It has a really hard time moving and bouncing your viscera up and down, which would maybe make it more helpful to move gas along. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Is to yep. have this wonderful rhythm, right? The gas, the pressure is just rising and rising. It's making your diaphragm rise up. And if your diaphragm can't descend and then return to its place, it's really hard to be in a calm state. In Body by Breath, I talk about three zones of respiration. And in zone one respiration, we're breathing in a way that our diaphragm descends, our organs distend cooperatively, yep. our pelvic floor distends, our lumbar region, the fascia of the lumbar called the thoracolumbar apophysis. We have this 360 expansion. And then all of that funnels right back in when the diaphragm goes back home into its ribcage. So we have this wonderful collaborative thing. And that is one of our easiest ways to know that we're in a calm state. Calm state breathing happens in zone one. If I'm not in zone one because I have pressure within my organs that aren't allowing the diaphragm to descend, I default into what's called zone two breathing. In zone two breathing, I'm relying on my intercostals. These are muscles that line the ribs. If you've ever eaten ribs, you've eaten intercostals, as well as the diaphragm to move the ribs up and down as I breathe. Now, zone two breathing is not illegal. You use this when you're running. You use this when you're pushing weights. You need this when you're moving a sofa across the floor, right? We have to brace our core. We have to brace our abdomen. We have to stiffen our abdomen and our back so that we don't injure our low back or our pelvis. So we have to breathe somewhere. We breathe in zone two. But if you're breathing in zone two all the time because you're bloated or because you have scar tissue in your abdomen that doesn't allow your diaphragm to descend, or maybe you breathe in zone two all the time because you want to look skinny, so you're pulling your abdomen in, it's going to create a overall more sympathetic tone in your body. You're going to be more upregulated. You're going to be more hype. You're going to be more agitated. And then what often happens in zone two, as if we're chronically in zone two because we're bloated, we're going to stay bloated because we're not entering into our rest and digest. We can't get into the calm state. And then that will often throw us into what I call zone three breathing, which is our in case of emergency breathing. And that's when breathing happens with face, neck, shoulder, jaw, where you'll end up. Yes, you'll heave, you'll hoist air into the upper portion of your airway. And this, we do this in the case of shock or fright or fear, or it's not always diabolical. You also do this in orgasm. you know, you'll have these sudden rapturous breaths, but it's usually very short lived. And so this is very high stress. So if we're in a blend of kind of zone three, zone two breathing, it's very difficult to then have healthy digestion because we are literally running the car. It's out of gas, but it's still running. I mean, you're okay, full of gas.
Yeah, right.
The analogy didn't work.
Yeah. So how do we fix that? There are so many women. Let me just put this. So many women that complain about bloating during their perimenopause. So that logic of what you just explained, I feel like every woman is like, yep, that's me. How do we fix it?
Yes. So I wanted to go through that so that I can then talk you through an application. So if you don't have something like a gorgeous ball, you don't need a gorgeous ball. You can use a pillow. You can use a rolled up yoga mat. And what I would do is lay yourself on your side. It's lay specifically on your left side and place an object that's comfortable. So whatever object you use, you don't want it. It shouldn't be hard. It shouldn't feel like you're punching yourself with an object. So a gentle thing, like, I mean, if you're just starting off with this, a pillow is great. And actually let your abdomen rest on it. I have an exercise in the book called Gut Baby, Mindy.
Mm. Oh,
so
perfect.
I can send you a photo of Gut Baby so you can see what I'm talking about. And allow the organs, which are gassy and having difficulty contracting well, the smooth muscle, actually let the organs rest on the ball or let it rest on the object. And then you take your top hand. So you picture yourself, you're laying on your side, probably have something underneath your head so that your head is supported. And then it's like pregnant belly, you allow these organs to traction away from their roots. Their root is in the mesentery. So this gets into some anatomy, but that all the blood that serves your intestines is like a giant dog in the back of your abdomen. And so what we're doing is we're tractioning these organs away, letting the vasculature have some stretch. We're stretching loads of fascia, by the way. We're stretching loads of muscle. All your core muscles are being stretched here. And then you just want to very quietly breathe into the gut. You want to try to allow the diaphragm to descend and relax. So it's just a very slow meditation. And then you take your top hand and rest it on your top side of your abdomen. And you just keep coaxing the abs out. Now, I know it seems crazy. Like, wait, I'm going to try to get rid of the bloat. I'm going to squish the gas out. I want to press in. No. Actually, allow the gesture to complete. Allow fluff to come in. So you're essentially fluffing the organs. That is going to allow stretch to come into the colon, into the small intestine, allow the smooth muscle to then come back online because we're getting our zone one breath in there. And that's when your smooth muscles within the organs will start to contract, will start to move stuff along. You start on your left side so you can let the gas that's stuck along the sigmoid colon get out first. Otherwise, you'll have even more visceral pain. And after about 3 to 5 minutes, then you can switch to the other side and you'll start to hear the bergerigmy. You'll hear like those whale sounds in the gut as gas is starting to move along finally from where it's been congested within your organs.
So, and what kind of breathing technique? Should we do the in for like 4, out for 6? Like, should the exhale be longer than the inhale to just kind of calm the nervous system?
If you're able to do that. So sometimes a paced breath. So as I mentioned before, pace of breath is really critical. Longer exhales than inhales in general. But the introduction of this pressure into the gut and this sort of this odd traction of the gut can be so discombobulating for some that sometimes I'll just tell people, just watch your body breathe. Watch your body breathe. Don't try to control it because we're trying to control everything, right?
Right.
Just
right.
Let your body breathe. And then within a few minutes, what happens typically to those people is all of a sudden they'll yawn. They'll have an involuntary sigh, just a all of a sudden they'll have a stage shift. And that's when you can then start pacing out the breath. So sometimes I just want the body to be, all the feels are welcome here. My body thinks and feels. My breath is home. My organs are home. And not try to over-control them. Just let them rest on the ball and be with them.
Yeah. Okay. So just so I'm clear, you roll up a yoga mat or a pillow. You're starting on your left side. You're laying on your left side. You're letting your abdomen just kind of hang. Like you said, what'd you call it? The gut baby. Where's the ball?
I'm going to show you the picture in the book.
Oh, it's in the book. So, okay, great. So that, because there.
Oh, listen, you know what? I have this online. I have a free video of gut baby. Look at that. I have
amazing.
A QR code. So can you see how I'm the ball, how my abs
totally
are kind of like
yep.
loaded on there.
Okay. So you're using the pressure of the mechanoreceptors of the fascia of the gut, which actually is really interesting. You have me thinking now because bloating I've always thought of as for the perimenopause and menopausal woman is it's a trouble clearing estrogen. It's like, you know, really for the woman who still has a cycle, it's often that post-ovulation bloat because the body can't clear the estrogen. But then now you're really giving me insight on how to use mechanoreceptors to tap into this estrogen system. So, you know, I hope every woman who still has a cycle, one real important place you would use this would be post-ovulation, don't you think?
Yes. And one of the other things that I want to make sure that your listeners know is that your organs are comprised of collagen.
Mm.
Right? So these are fascial structures too, right? Our organs are surrounded by fascia, but I had turned this off, but it's coming in. The motility slowing is also due to elastic changes throughout your body. Collagen is not, the fascia is not just where the collagen is. The collagen, you know, fascia is a structure that comprises your colon and your small intestines too. So we have these collagen changes and estrogen changes all over. Interesting. Really interesting to think about.
It's like a part of the hormone conversation I literally have never had. So you have my brain totally geeked out on this. So if I'm a perimenopause or menopausal woman, bloating is a big issue. I know it's collagen changes. Could I do a daily routine? Like, could I take a yoga tune-up ball and just go along the large intestine? Go, I used to do this in my clinic all the time for when kids had colic. Babies had colic. I would show the parents how to do an upside down U on the belly with their hand. I'm feeling like we need to do that with the ball when we go through these perimenopausal years.
Yeah. So the Gorgeous ball, I mean, you can inflate it to the density you like, and it takes a little bit to get used to it. That's why I start people generally on their side so that they can acclimate to their own pain pressure threshold and also get familiar with the feeling of their viscera, right? With these visceral pressures, because it is very, very odd. But ultimately, abdominal massage, self-abdominal massage is, I think, just critical to digestive health, but also to mobilize gut-sensitized lymph to move it to the thoracic duct. I mean, it's very helpful for your immune system. It's also very helpful for your core mechanics, right? Because like you said, the mechanosensors, so we're stretching and we're pressuring and we're shearing these different muscles of the core. So ultimately, this can help back pain, change your relationship to back pain, and be able to make these muscles more functional. And this is to say nothing of what it's also doing for the help of the respiratory diaphragm and then the rib cage. They're higher than that because we also do the same type of work on the rib cage.
It's fascinating to me. I literally, like, I've thought a lot. I love anatomy. When you're like, oh, I'm not to geek out on anatomy, I'm like, yes, let's geek out on anatomy. I love anatomy. But I had never thought of the mechanoreceptors and the power of stimulating those through the menopausal process. And to me, through the menopausal process means 40. Anything after 40, we start to see these hormonal shifts. And I, in my clinic all the time, I saw so many extreme athletes at the end of their 40s injure themselves and they were not recovering. What I'm currently seeing is so many women that are dealing with bloating, you know, throughout their 40s and it's just driving them crazy. And what you just taught me was we got to go think about these mechanoreceptors and stimulating them so that we are adapting for the changes in hormones.
Yes. And I mean, there's so much to talk about because, I mean, there are also some really other important areas of the body that I think athletes need to really make sure that they're rolling on a regular basis because of this changeover of type 3 to type 1 collagen. So the ankles are really, really important, especially because of the prevalence of Achilles tears. that starts to ramp up with aging. And it's just really puzzling how people are like, I had no clue that I was about to rupture, like with these sudden ruptures. And I'm specifically thinking about one of my clients. She was playing pickleball. Pickleball injuries, anyone?
Yes, 59.
Yeah, 59 years old. And she was simply walking backwards on the court. So her ankle was in dorsiflexion. That means, you know, that's the position that your ankle is in when your knee is ahead of your toes. And the calf is greatly stretched. And she's just walking backwards. It was no shuffle backwards. It was a walk backwards. And the Achilles popped. And I mean, this is a healthy woman. I mean, she has been a student of mine for decades and is just super healthy. And I just could not figure out how she didn't get feedback from her calf that she was beyond range or beyond a safe range, or that there was no signal to her.
There was no sign. Yeah.
No signal ever. And so the same researcher, Carla Stucco, at the most recent Fascia Research Congress, which was 2020, maybe it was at the same conference that she did this other lecture on aging. And what she described, and this gets real, real anatomical. So let me just describe to the listeners. You have fascia wrapping around every single muscle cell of your body, right? So like if you imagine an orange, everybody can picture the orange analogy. If you like you open up the orange and then you get your segments, but then you segment the segment. And when you pull the skin of the segment apart, you see all these beautiful glistening kryptonite looking juice things inside of a little cellulose packet, right? And you can just pop it and all of a sudden you have this clear see-through cellulose. It's really cool, right?
Yep.
Your muscle cells are the same way. Every muscle cell is surrounded by fascia. And the surrounding fascia at that point, at the level of the muscle cell, is called the endomysium. Then you have these muscle cells that come together. And this bundle of muscle cells is called a fascicle. We can also call that a fascicle. I think that's probably the correct pronunciation. In my head, it's fascicle. And the fascia there is called the perimysium. And then when you have bunches of clumps of these fascicles together, then we have a muscle, and it's wrapped in more fascia called the epimysium. But this fascia is continuous. Like this is like spun and spun and spun and spun. So the stretch sensor in a muscle is called the muscle spindle. And it has a capsule. And the capsule of the muscle, so a muscle spindle, senses pull on the muscle. Mm. And this is how we sense stretch. We sense stretch because there's pulling occurring. And then your brain is like, oh, there's feeling stretch. I'm going to stop stretching because it's too much. But it's a yanking actually on the fascial capsule in this spindle. And the capsule is made up of endomysium, perimysium, and epimysium. So just stay with me here. If my type 3 collagen is being steadily replaced with type 1 collagen, I may not necessarily be feeling stretch where I used to feel stretch anymore because the stiffening is so profound and I'm at a loss, a sensory loss. I start to lose sensory. I get like sensory amnesia because of this overstiffening, and I'm not even aware that it's happening because you're just not aware of it. And I think that that's probably part of the mechanism that led to my friend rupturing, because she had no sensation of stretch. And so it's this, and so I think, you know, she wasn't rolling her ankles. She wasn't doing stimulation with the therapy balls in specific ways at all, if at all. So anyway, I think that there are certain areas of our body, wrists, fingers, hands, feet, ankles, that are very high charge zones of movement, of differential movement, that we need this differential movement. And, you know, we see these incidents of ruptures and then, of course, of surgeries for carpal tunnel. These are due to fascial narrowing, not just, you know, this is age-related changes to fascia. So I think that to go back to, let's keep stimulating our connective tissues via friction, especially with this recession of estrogen.
In your book, do you have like a daily protocol? That's what I just learned as I was listening to you on that. I thought, well, there needs to be a daily protocol if we're not going to have a sense that the stiffness could leave. I mean, my husband had an Achilles tendon rupture and it changed him forever
Ever.
for for all the wrong, you know, his fitness level, and he couldn't play soccer anymore. It was a big deal. So how do we make sure that we don't do that? Do you have like a like a 2 minute, 5 minute protocol in your book that people could reference to just make sure they're hitting it all?
Yeah, Body by Breath is really concerned about the body-wide impacts of respiration. My first book, The Role Model, which I always have a copy of right here.
Great.
This book goes through every body part and teaches you how to roll. And so I think that, you know, I don't necessarily say like, this is exactly how you have to roll every time, because I think people should use their own sensibility. But it would be a good idea to get some good rolling friction around your ankle and throughout your feet. And I have an online classroom where I take people through so many different possibilities of rolling for so many different reasons. But yes, most of the people that work with me do some rolling every day. Including myself and my husband, who's my partner in business. But yeah.
Amazing.
It's a lifestyle.
Oh, yeah, no. But that this has been like my plea to the world is that there is a lifestyle change that needs to happen for women after 40. End of story. Your hormones are going away. You're losing neurotransmitters. You've got to learn how to build a life that adapts to that loss. We can put a patch on it. That can help. But we still have this lifestyle. And what I'm hearing now is stimulating the mechanoreceptors is part of that adaptation. Breath is part of that adaptation. And so I love that you've put these manuals together for us so that we can lean into both those books. And we'll leave links for your books to sort of show us where we can get a door in. One of my curiosities and something I've been thinking a lot about this year is the memory that fascia has of trauma. And, you know, if you look at the old theories around Rolfing, you mentioned earlier on that there's emotions stored in our fascia as well. So talk to us a little bit about what we need to know just about emotional stuff that might come up as we start to roll and breathe into fascia. Have you seen people have emotions come up and out of them?
Yeah, so I would probably frame the response around, you know, I've dissected a number of bodies, and when I'm in there, I don't see the emotion. I just see the fact.
That's right.
So I just want to say, like, I think that, you know, there's some old myths in the yoga space, like, oh, well, your dad's in your left hip, mom's in your right hip. I don't really subscribe to that. That's a truth. What I do know is that with these 250 million sensory nerve endings in your fascial tissues, when you're rolling, you're not just increasing range of motion, but you will be rolling and experiencing a range of emotion. And you don't necessarily know why, wherefore, how, or what the is emerging from you.
Yeah.
But it's very important to honor the responses that your body has. As you contact the places within yourself that you might not let other people touch.
Yeah.
And I think that's just so highly valuable to be able to track yourself, to treat yourself, and to sense yourself so that you are in total ownership of the experience of the, being the giver and the receiver of this sensitive touch, light touch, deep touch, whatever it is that pleases you and that feeds your interest, your curiosity. So yes, I see it all the time. And that is one of the biggest motivations for writing Body by Breath. When I wrote The Role Model and I started writing this in, oh my God, 2000. So this book is 10 years old. I started writing it 12 years ago, The Role Model. And I put a call to action out to my students all over the world. Hey, how has rolling helped your body or your life? And I expected people to send in answers like, oh, it helped me recover from my knee surgery, or it prevented my back surgery, or, you know, I used it during chemo and it was very, you know, helpful for this and that. I really expected a lot of these sort of clinical answers. Every story I got, and this book is loaded with testimonies, every story I got had a huge emotional component, huge self-regulation component. And I knew that was true for me because I came to rolling because of my own eating disorders. I started doing abdominal massage because I was bulimic and I couldn't feel my abs. Mm-hmm. And when I was in Pilates, and I needed to figure out a way to connect the dots, mm-hmm. to connect mm-hmm. this hemisphere of, you know, this part of my life, which was my brain trying to control everything. And then this body underneath that was just struggling and following urges. And so for me, the self-massage was the thing that brought me into a sense of wholeness with myself. And I really wanted to know, well, why was that? Why is this self-touch so emotionally regulating? And so Body by Breath was partly born of that investigation of why were so many people using these as a soothing mechanism, as a coping mechanism, not just to help with their neck pain, or why were they helping their neck pain? And all of a sudden, they started to cry and they started to process things. Yeah. And so when you say the body keeps the score, this is very much in line with the touch therapy, the somatic psychotherapy space of realizing that the body does hold emotion. The body thinks and feels. It's not just that we have all these stories in our head. Our body tells the story, but sometimes it's very difficult for an individual to be able to hear their own story or process their own story. And this work, I think, gives you a framework for creating the time and the space to be able to do that for yourself. And then if you need to seek additional help, if you need a counselor or a therapist or a group, I encourage you in the book. I have resources of, you know, people in the somatic psych space that can help you process this range of emotion that is suddenly showing itself to you.
Yeah, that's so beautifully said. Okay, where do people find these books? I'm like, I'm creating Christmas lists in my head as you're talking. I'm like, okay, this person I know needs it. Where do they find the books and where do they find the balls? Because I think you've referred to the balls a couple times.
Yes.
So we'll leave links for everything, but just verbally, how do we get to your resources?
Yeah, I have a big website, tuneupfitness.com. So my company is Tune Up Fitness, and I teach online classes once a week. I also have a mentor program where we get together and we discuss all this work. There's a number of trainings that are available on the site. Brock, on your staff, knows Katie Bowman. I've done a program with her called Walking Well. I referenced Tom Myers earlier. We have a program called Rolling Along the Anatomy Trains. My friend Kelly Starrett, who wrote the foreword to The Role Model, we have a program called Treat While You Train. I even have a HIIT program, funny, with a physical therapist friend of mine, Dr. Jennifer Brony, called Rolling to HIIT. So the books are, those are available. All those programs and balls are on tuneupfitness.com. Role Model's available on tuneupfitness.com. Body by Breath is not available on our website because it is so heavy. This is
it got sent to me. It was really heavy. Yes. So
it's a hardback. And so the best price that can be done is on Amazon. So we can't beat Amazon's prices. So we don't carry it. And you can also find it at Barnes & Noble, Target, Walmart, and then all over the world. I can't remember the European websites, but there are certainly available all over the world through, I think, blackwells.co through .uk. Yeah.
Beautiful. Well, this was fascinating. So I thank you for taking a hormonal perspective with me in this conversation. You know, I'm really trying to give women over 40 solutions and really understanding our body. And wow, the changes to our fascial system, I did not expect to hear what you presented to us today. So thank you for that.
Well, you're amazing to bounce this stuff off of. And I'm so excited by what I learned from you today, too. Thank you. I promise I'm going to keep going down this track and hopefully I'll discover and learn more and then we can do a share,
Let's do it.
A year from now or
yeah,
so.
Yeah, you know, I think the question that I have keep coming back to is if estradiol stimulated every organ system, what do we need to do to backfill in? And we can still put the patch on, we can still take the creams, but we still have to have this conversation about lifestyle, and it's intricate. And what I'm hoping everybody hears is that a lot of the symptoms that show up for us, we put in the category of aging or they're so troublesome, they affect our life, and we don't understand why. And what I'm trying to do is help people understand why, because the body doesn't do anything by mistake. When you are bloating, it wasn't like all of a sudden, you know, the powers that be was like, I'm going to give you a distended abdomen today. There is something that the body is trying to tell us. And you just gave me a whole nother piece of that. So I really appreciate it. I got to finish with my favorite question. I love knowing people's superpower. What's your superpower, do you think, that you bring to the world?
Oh, my goodness. Playfulness.
Yay. Amazing. We need more of that. We need, and how does that show up for you? Because a lot of women.
You should see me play with my balls, Mindy.
You know, sometimes my kids, my grandkids, they're 23 and 21. They'll be like, Mom, you're like a grown kid. And I'm like, yeah, there's like this little kid in me sometimes that doesn't want to work, doesn't want to do anything, and just wants to goof around. So I'm trying to learn how to bring her out more because the adult life made her quite serious. So I love hearing that you have that playfulness is your superpower. It's beautiful. Well, thank you. And we will send everybody to tuneupfitness.com and get your books. And I have several people listening to this probably already received a present from me. So appreciate you, Jill.
Thank you, Mindy.
Keep up the good work.
Thank you. You too.
Thank you. Thank you so much for joining me in today's episode. I love bringing thoughtful discussions about all things health to you. If you enjoyed it, we'd love to know about it. So please leave us a review, share it with your friends, and let me know what your biggest takeaway is.